Hello, listener. Welcome back to English Bulletin over RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. Stand by now for the news.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia with the news.
Here is the news first headlines. Presiden SAS Trans-Java Toll Route to easy mobility of people and logistics. The central bank says Indonesia's fourth quarter current account deficit may exceed 3%. Those are the lines now deduced in detail. I'm Dolot Panit. Indonesian President Joko Widodo has reiterated that the Trans-Java Toll Road will make the mobility of people and logistics easier and cheaper. President Jokowi stated at the launch of the Trans-Java Toll Road section Pemalang-Batang and Batang-Semarang on Kalikuto Bridge on Thursday that the construction of routes will offer options to people on whether they will use the Trans-Java Toll Road or the Northern Coast Road. Go ahead. He added that the toll road is expected to integrate the development of an industrial area, special economic zone, and tourism to encourage investment and open more jobs opportunities. The toll road will be free for the public until January 1, 2019. Meanwhile, Public Works and Public Housing Minister Basuki Hadimulyono said three sections of the 142-kilometer toll road in Central Java, inaugurated by the President, are the 34-kilometer section of Pemalang-Batang, 75-kilometer section of Batang-Semarang, and 33-kilometer section of Salatiga-Kartasuria. The Trans-Java Toll Road, being constructed during the period of from 2015-2018, has connected Merak in Banten and Grati in Pasuruan of East Java with a total length of 616 km. Bank Indonesia has predicted that the country's full-quarter current account deficit may exceed 3% of the gross domestic products after its exports and imports in November suffered the highest deficit of $2.05 billion throughout this year. Bank Indonesia Governor Perry Warjio stated at a press conference following a meeting of the Central Bank's Board of Governors on Thursday that it was not a major surprise if the current account deficit at the end of the fourth quarter of 2018 will be above 3% of the GDP. He noted that imports, which led to the current account deficit, were dominated by capital goods and raw materials, which will contribute to long-term productive economic activities. He added the current account deficit is still safe. With the fourth quarter current account deficit estimated at above 3%, the central bank predicted that the current account deficit for all of 2018 will average 3% of the GDP compared to 1.7% of the GDP a year earlier. Despite the quite high current account deficit, he believed the balance of payment in 2018 will record a surplus due to a high inflow of foreign capital. In November 2018 alone, foreign capital inflows reached $7.9 billion. The government needs to lure in more foreign investment to have improved its foreign trade performance. Researcher of Center for Indonesian Policy Studies, CIPS, Asifa Sami Ilman said on Thursday that the government needs to encourage more foreign investment to cope with the country's foreign trade deficit. The country recorded a deficit of $2.047 billion in November 2018, or the worst performance in the country's foreign trade since January 2014. Asifa said the price of palm oil and coal, which still dominate the country's export commodities, declined in international market, resulting in a fall in the export earning and wider deficit. Earlier, Chief Economics Minister Darmin Nasution said the government policy seeking to boost exports and reduce imports began to be effective only in the last quarter of this year. The government hoped to increase exports and cut imports to curb or reduce current account deficit. Darmin said efforts to boost investment in export-oriented industries and to increase the use of biodiesel 20 had not been fully effective as expected. The government has ruled wider use of B20 as transport and industrial fuel to reduce import of diesel oil. Darmin, however, said he was confident the B20 policy would show result in the last quarter of this year, that the current account deficit could cut from $8.8 billion in the third quarter of 2017. The international world is currently being horrified by the acts of Chinese government who allegedly violates the Uyghur Muslims' human rights. Almost 1 million Muslim Uyghur in Xinjiang province are forced to take part in a program called re-education. The news spread with international media reports that Uyghur Muslims were tortured to the point of being forced to renounce their beliefs. It gets response from Indonesia. Indonesian Vice President Yusuf Kala told media on Thursday that Indonesia was very concerned about the treatment received by Uyghur Muslims, especially if it proved that it violated human rights. Kala further added, the world community also needs to distinguish between acts of discrimination and efforts of de-radicalization by the Chinese authorities. Masuk insert, dubbing insert laporannya Retno. The radicalism or terror that came from the Uyghurs have Santoso in Poso, so we also understand that. Also concerned, it should be distinguished. In the solving the conflict in Poso, there were 6 who participated from Uyghur died and 4 detained. Itu akhir pada dubbing insert. According to the vice president, even so, Indonesia is still awaiting a report from the Indonesian embassy in Beijing, which has been tasked with seeing firsthand the conditions of Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang province. This news comes to you over the voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. Deputy Secretary General of Indonesian Ulema's Council MUI, Amirsa Tambunan, has warned that China's persecution of Uyghur Muslims may threaten its bilateral relations with Indonesia. He stated in a discussion on violation of Uyghur ethnic groups' human rights on Thursday, if Chinese government did not take a concrete step, its discriminatory and arbitrary action, its bilateral ties with Indonesia in political, economic and social fields may face a problem. He noted the persecution of Uyghur ethnic group is against humanity and is not justified by any religion. In addition, it runs counter to the 1945 Constitution and hurts the Indonesian community's feeling. He also said, to prevent the recurrence of the condemned actions, the United Nations must take a stand to put an end to the oppression of the Uyghur ethnic group. The UN should not only condemn the operation, but also take a concrete step to stop violence against the Uyghur ethnic group. He pointed out, obviously, the freedom of worship is the fundamental human rights of everyone, regardless of what their religion is. The human rights of people cannot be injured. Indonesian Minister of Foreign Affairs Retno Marsudi has appealed to the Indonesian youth to maintain unity and respect differences in order to create peace in the nation's life. Marsudi stated on Wednesday, while addressing some 1,000 students at a talk show held at the Pajajaran University, Bandung, West Java, that peace is not fall from the sky. Peace must be sought and cared for. Meanwhile, differences are natural. Hence, the denial of differences a denial of nature. Minister Marsudi also highlighted several efforts made by Indonesia to safeguard world peace. The minister stressed that for Indonesia, peace and humanitarian diplomacy were two priorities of Indonesia's international diplomacy in the midst of increasing global uncertainty. For instance, to assist conflict-stricken Afghanistan, the Indonesian government initiated a trilateral ulema meeting of Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Indonesia aimed at inviting scholars from the three nations to exchange views on peace. In addition, the Indonesian government consistently supports the struggle of Palestinians to achieve independence. In October 2018, the Palestine Walk was inaugurated and marked Indonesia's solidarity for the Palestinian cause. The Aceh administration has stated that Indonesia's western outermost island, designated as a national tourism strategic area, has become the main world cruise tour destination. Head of the Aceh Tourism and Culture Office, Amiruddin, stated at the focus group discussion on tourism promotion development on Thursday, the presence of cruise ships in Sabah has had positive economic impacts for the locals, especially for tourism industry players in the area. The Aceh Provincial Administration expressed hope that all parties would improve the tourism industry's marketing strategy in welcoming cruise ships. Meanwhile, Vice Mayor of Sabang, Suraji Yunus, noted that the administration continued to prepare very strong supporting infrastructure and facilities to make every visitor traveling to Sabah feel comfortable and safe. The local government committed to continuing to promote the tourism business in Sabah so that every tourist can experience comfort and safety while traveling. During the International Annual Yachts Rally that links destinations across Indonesia in 2017, Sail Indonesia had taken routes at several locations in Indonesia and ended in Sabah on December 1, 2017. Well, listener, that was the news.
This is RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, with commentary which today is on Yemen is still vulnerable. Although the two parties in dispute in Yemen, namely the government troops and the Houthi rebels, agreed to a ceasefire, there were still several shootings happened. As a result, there is a possibility that an armed conflict will occur again between the two parties. Based on an agreement mediated by the United Nations, a ceasefire should begin on Tuesday, December the 18th. But the United Nations apparently has not officialized the plan, as seen at the video conference on Wednesday regarding troops withdrawal from Hodeidah. The Saudi Arabian coalition supporting the Yemen government recorded that on Tuesday, which should have been included in the ceasefire agreement, there were still 20 times of armed contact. If it turns out that it comes from both sides, then it is just a matter of time before the Stockholm Agreement becomes a historical record on paper only. In the war in Yemen, the issue of humanity also deserves the attention of the world. During the 4 years of war, the World Health Organization noted at least 10,000 people died. However, various human rights activists said the number is 5 times the WHO record. The war left nearly half of Yemen's 30 million people in starvation. It is also not wrong if the United Nations calls this case of Yemen the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. Unfortunately, the United Nations record is still exacerbated by the deaths of 6,000 children. Why did they become victims? Apparently, they were recruited to be involved in warfare. Houthi rebels are claimed to recruit up to 18,000 children. Why were the children recruited? One reason is the unbalanced number of power. The coalition forces are supported by 140,000 personnel, while the Houthi rebels have only 60,000 in number. But apart from that reason, it is not appropriate to involve children in armed conflict. This should be solved together by the warring groups to immediately end the battle. They should think more about the fate of the war-torn country. When will the two parties begin to think more about the interests of the Yemen people instead of the interests of their respective groups? That was commentary today. I'm Anna Trijaya Kasih, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta.
Voice of Indonesia.
Listener, welcome back to our regular Today in History, a regular segment which brings back people and events from this date in the past, as recorded in history. We start from an event on December 21, 1964, when PLO was established. The Palestine Liberation Organization, PLO, was established on December 21, 1964. When it was established, the PLO consisted of 8 militant groups and a number of educational, social, medical, cultural, and financial institutions. A year later, the PLO military division named the Fatah Group started their activities. In 1974, the PLO was accepted as an observer member in the United Nations until 1982. The organization successfully established an official relationship with more than 100 countries. But then, in line with the increasingly strong anti-Zionist regime's actions against PLO activities, this organization changed its tactics of struggle with diplomacy. This was apparent with the willingness of PLO leader Yasser Arafat to sign the Oslo Agreement in September 1993, with the official recognition of the existence of the State of Israel, with compensation for the granting of
autonomous states to the Palestine by the Zionists. However, the Zionists apparently ignored the contents of the agreement, and up to now, they continue to kill and terror against Palestinians. The next event was on December 21, 1968, when Apollo 8 was launched on the second Apollo manned flight into the orbit of the Moon. Apollo 8 is the second manned space mission on the US Apollo program. The mission was launched on December 21, 1968, and became the first manned space mission to leave Earth orbit, reaching the orbit of the Moon, and then returning to the Earth. Astronauts Frank Borman, James Lovell, William Anders became the first humans to pass through low Earth orbits and to see the far side of the Moon. Apollo 8 took 3 days to reach the orbit of the Moon. Apollo 8 rounded the Moon 10 times for 20 hours and then returned to Earth on December 27, 1968 by landing in the Pacific Ocean. The last event was on December 21, 1988, when the Pan American World Airways plane exploded in the air and crashed in Lockerbie, Scotland. Pan Am Flight 103 is a daily flight of Pan American World Airways from Heathrow International Airport, London, to John F. Kennedy International Airport, New York. On December 21, 1988, a registered Boeing 747-100 and 739PA airplane, named Clipper Made of the Seas, exploded in the air as it flew over Lockerbie, Dumfries, and Galloway, Scotland, when a 340 to 450 gram plastic explosive was detonated at the front cargo spot, triggering further events, leading to the rapid destruction of the aircraft. Winds with a speed of 100 knots or 190 km per hour spread passengers and other goods along 130 km. 271 people from 21 countries died, including 11 people on the ground. The bombing of Lockerbie that shocked the world's population was a direct command of Libyan leader Colonel Muammar al-Gaddafi. That was today in history.
Voice of Indonesia.
Sudah tak mungkin hasrat cinta menyatu, walau rasa itu masih ada, bahkan telah jadi bagian dalam hidupku. Coba tanyakan ketulusan cinta ini, hanya engkaulah satu harapan dan
Voice of Indonesia.
Welcome back to My Indonesia with the topic Indonesia signing trade agreement with four European countries. After going through a lengthy negotiation process, finally Indonesia and four European countries that are members of the European Free Trade Association, EFTA, signed a free trade agreement at the Ministry of Trade Office, Jakarta, on Sunday, December 16. The agreement involved four European countries, including Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Iceland, and Norway. Minister of Trade Enggar Tias Tolukita, when giving a press statement, said the free trade agreement was in line with President Joko Widodo's direction to open new markets. Minister Enggar Tias Tolukita also said that this is one of the main priorities outlined by the president because it has opened up new markets, and not merely open trade, market access, but also investment. The agreement covers issues of trade in goods, services, investment, intellectual property rights, sustainable development, origin and customs provisions, trade facilitation, trade security, business competition, legal and cooperation, as well as capacity building. Enggar Tias Tolukita explained, almost 99% of goods from Indonesia will apply zero tariffs to enter the European Free Trade Association EFTA and vice versa. In trade of goods, Indonesia will gain increased market access to EFTA, including fisheries, industrial, and agricultural products, including coffee and palm oil. In addition, the agreement also opens up access for Indonesian workers to EFTA countries, also agrees on cooperation and capacity building in the areas of export promotion, tourism, micro, small and medium enterprises, intellectual property rights, cocoa, coconut palm oil, vocational education, maritime industry, and fisheries. Minister Enggar Tias Tolukita moreover said the Indonesia's openness has been calculated carefully. The agreement will not give the loss to Indonesia. Minister Enggar Tias Tolukita believes the agreement of a comprehensive economic partnership between Indonesia and EFTA will make the Indonesian economy stronger. It can be more competitive and attractive to investors from developed countries. Moreover, the signing of the agreement took place amid the weakening of world trade. That was My Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia.
Sentuh nada lagu ini, terbayang wajahmu. Rasa hatiku ingin terbang dan melayang menatap matamu. Selama ini aku memendam rindu. Terciptalah lagu ini tentang kita, cinta takkan hilang oleh waktu, cinta selalu akan ada, dan cinta membuatku bahagia selamanya. Selamanya.
Voice of Indonesia.
Listener, in today's Indonesian Wonder, we will introduce you Gebuk Ende Tradition. Stay with us, Voice of Indonesia, on www.voinews.id, or you can also hear through frequency 3325 kHz. Listeners, a Pemutaran Bay Festival or PBF was held on 13th up to 15th December 2018. It did not only show concern for nature, but culture got large concern as well. One of the performances was by displaying a tradition of the Balinese people, namely Gebuk Ende. Gebuk Ende attraction was performed from 13 to 14 December at 3 p.m. up to 5:30 p.m. or Middle Indonesia time. This sacred culture was conducted attractively, so it got appreciation from visitors. Listeners, Gebuk Ende, or usually called as Rotan War, is a cultural heritage and an ancestral tradition that is still carried out by Balinese people until now. This unique tradition is held related to dry season. It is usually held to request rain in Sasih Kapat or Balinese Hindu calendar, or from October to November. Gebuk Ende is done by two men. They wear udeng or Balinese headgear, and they are shirtless. They bring ende or tamyang and rattan as the main weapon to hit rattan has a length of 1.5 to 2 meters. Before this action began, Mekaru ceremony was held as a presentation for Buta Kala. Listeners, participants who are hit by rattan cannot mutually take revenge. We all believe when there is a drop of blood from the slayed, so nature will send its blessings such as rain. In spite of sacred performance, the Gebuk Ende performance is performed lively with Balinese gamelan instrument. The participants attack each other. After Saye or referee beats rattan for 3 times. In the Gebuk Ende tradition, the participants fight with limited dividing lines. Particularly, there is no awarding status for winning in this Gebuk Ende show. Listeners, Gebuk Ende comes from Seraya Village, Karangasem, Bali. Eventually, the tradition developed in the Gerok-Gak area because it was carried by Krama Desa Seraya that migrated. This tradition then developed in West Buleleng in 1925, especially in Sumber Kima village. In 1930, there was an expansion division of Pemutaran traditional village into several regions. The expansion of the Pemutaran traditional village also resulted around 8 villages. They are Sumber Kima, Pejarakan, Pemutaran, Sumber Kelapok, Patas, Bayupon, Penyambangan, and Sangalangit villages. Over time, this tradition is routinely held when long dry season comes. In performing Gebuk Ende, village courtiers beg Ida Betara in order to rain. Well, listeners, that's Indonesian Wonder for today's edition about Gebuk Ende tradition. We will meet in another interesting topics. Bye-bye!
Voice of Indonesia.
Terbayangkan sedikitpun saat kau pergi untuk selamanya. Aku tersentak dan tak mau percaya saat ku tahu kau telah tiada. Aku terluka. Air mata ini mengalir deras, namun tak bisa kembalikan dirimu. Kan ku lukiskan kepedihan ini, biar ku simpan perasaan perih ini. Oh,
Voice of Indonesia.
This is Voice of Indonesia with Miss Lenny. In today's edition, we will present information about ITB discovers giant stegodon tusk in Majalengka, West Java. So stay tuned with us on www.voinews.id. Listeners, the Paleontology Laboratory team of Bandung Institute of Technology, ITB, found a fossil in the form of a pair of stegodon tusks from early Pleistocene, or about 1.5 million years ago. This fossil was found in Majalengka, West Java. This discovery is one of the largest in 2018 in Indonesia by the laboratory team of the Quaternary Paleontology and Geology Working Group, Faculty of Earth Sciences and Technology of ITB. The size of tusk fossil found as a thread length about 3.30 meters, while the arch length is 3.60 meters. This finding is the result of the work of a team led by Professor Jahdi Zaim as a head of the Paleontology Laboratory. Professor Jahdi Zaim said that stegodon tusk fossil was obtained by a long process because the removal of the fossil is not easy to do. The fossil location is near the river flow. Besides discovering the stegodon, there are other fossils in the form of ancient crocodiles and plants. There are also other fossils, including the stegodon skull. According to him, this finding is very spectacular for ITB, and this is the biggest ivory finding in 2018 in Indonesia. One of the team's members, Dr. Mika Puspaningrum, explained that viewed from a large size of tusk, this stegodon is male with a height of more than 3 meters. This includes adult stegodon tusk and even it's very old. This can be seen from the tip of the ivory that is worn or flat. This species is probably Trigonocephalus in Java. It could be when the Java island became land. The species eats more leaves and grasses. All the destruction of the stegodon fossil will be taken to Bandung Geology Museum to be restored and reconstructed. That was Miscellany for today with the topic ITB discovers giant stegodon tusk in Majalengka. We will meet again with other interesting topics. Sampai jumpa lagi.
Voice of Indonesia.
Kini dekat tiada menemani. kini mimpi-mimpi tak serupa. Tanpa di kau di sisi kekasih mengusapi lenaku ini. Hadirmu sementara seketika cuma pergimu selamanya kemilauan cintamu menyuluhi cintaku asmaramu semua.
Voice of Indonesia.
Listener, welcome back to Music Corner. In today's edition, we will introduce you to some songs from Southeast Sulawesi. To initiate our segment, let's listen to a song entitled Wulele Sanggula. Enjoy listening and stay tuned.
Thank you.
Listener, you have just listened to a song entitled Ulele Sanggula by Citra Andriani. The folk song of Southeast Sulawesi is composed by Sanib. The song has cheerful melody and it tells a story of an angel who falls from her heaven. The story of the gorgeous angel is one of the iconic folk tales of Southeast Sulawesi people. Next, let's listen to another song from Southeast Sulawesi entitled Tanah Wolio, or the Land of Wolo in English. Happy listening!